Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today we're going to talk about a topic that used to bug me all the time, and it actually used to bug my wife all the time, but now I've just kind of developed a thick skin, which is getting haters. Whenever you put out content, whenever you put yourself out there, like, there's going to be people that just don't like you or what you have to say.
I joke now, I did not handle haters well initially, but I joke now that if you get haters, that's always a good sign because it shows people are paying attention.
But it still hurts.
It does hurt, absolutely.
I would say that, so I actually get a lot of hate emails. The ones that hurt the most are the ones that have some sort of element of truth to them.
Yes.
Like if it's just like, you suck, then I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever, I suck. But if they say, hey, your podcast sucks because your audio, or you say ums all the time, or you're just not a good speaker, I'm like, oh, that one kind of hurts.
Yeah, anything that drills into some of your insecurities are much harder, even if they're not true. But maybe you're insecure. This is not you, but maybe you have an insecurity about how you sound. Like, oh, I don't like the sound of my own voice. And someone sends you an email that says, I can't stand listening to your podcast. You're so nasally.
Yes, you know, that's a good example.
That's like, oh, because maybe you aren't even very nasally, but you've always felt that way, or you have this little bit of you that has the insecurity. That's when it's really hard to get over. But so when I first started blogging, you know, comments were much more popular. I mean, there's still some sites that get a lot of comments today. I don't get a ton of comments anymore. I think people do their commenting on social media more than anything.
I don't think I've gotten like maybe one comment a week, maybe.
Yeah.
At most.
And you know, I would get comments that I would laugh at. The ones that like are ridiculous, you can easily laugh off. Like, I remember I put out this chore chart and people, and it, that post probably still has 150 comments. Like, people went berserk over this thing because there are people that don't think your kids should have to do chores, you know, and all those comments I laughed at, right? But someone said to me in a comment, or maybe they emailed me, they said, you just had children because you didn't want to work hard. And for me, because I have a big family, like, people always feel the need to like comment on your choices of your family size, whether you have no kids, a lot of kids, everyone feels like they get to have an opinion in that, which drives me insane. Like, I would never comment on someone's family size ever. Right. But that one hurt because I already felt a little insecure. Like, I was always getting judged for how many kids I had. And then when they said you only had kids so that you didn't want to work, it like hit all of my, like, oh, do you think I'm lazy? I'm not lazy. I work really hard. I'm a really hard worker, right? I was always trying to prove how hard I worked. Oh, my, it's not bad that I have a lot of kids. I can support these kids. You know, all these things that I had felt like I was had this little touch of insecurity about, it hit all of them at once. And I think I like blocked their IP. I sent them a nasty email back. Like, that's not what you're supposed to, I don't recommend doing that today. But it like hit every nerve. And that was the one that I couldn't handle.
That's interesting.
Okay. If someone sent that to me today, you know, 12 years later, I would literally laugh in their face. Like, clearly you don't have children if you think having children lessens your workload. But, it, you know, was, back when my kids were little, that was painful.
I'm surprised that one got to you, actually.
I think because so many people felt the need to give their opinion on everything in my
life. Maybe you were self-conscious because you did have a big family.
Yeah.
And you were homeschooling also at the time, right?
Yes.
Because I'll be honest with you, when I first met you and
I know,
I learned you had seven kids and you were homeschooling. I was like, oh, okay.
I wasn't sure how to be friends.
Well, I wasn't sure how to act because there's all these stereotypes that
I know
that go on through my head.
But I think that's where when you if you're listening and you've received some feedback or comment or anything, if you feel pain, from it, it's probably triggering something inside of you that you've already felt, because I've gotten comments that I just laugh off because it's just like, sure, you know, like, especially on my recipes, like, this is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. Okay, well, my kids suck it down every week, so, you know, like, those things don't hurt me at all. But when you hit on these little pain points, that's where I think it gets
tough. So early on with my YouTube channel, I used to post videos, not to actually grow on YouTube, but I just kind of used it as an intermediate video storage. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was like my first video. And I said, honestly, like that word honestly, maybe like 100 times in the video. And so someone wrote a comment, honestly, I honestly think you suck. Honestly, you know, that was the comment. I was like, oh, wow, that one hurts. Because I didn't realize at the time.
Right.
But then once they mentioned that I said it so often, I went back and watched a video and I did say it every other sentence. And I was embarrassed.
Well, so this is sort of, it's on the same line. When I worked consulting, the president of the company pulled me aside one day, and we were friends. So it wasn't like this, you know, come to my office, you're in trouble. And he said to me, he's like, I want to give you a piece of feedback that I think will really help you. And he was being very genuine. And he said, you need to take the word kinda out of your vocabulary because it indicates that you're not sure about what you're saying, that you don't believe in yourself, basically. And I mean, I you know, I don't do terribly well with negative feedback in general, but that one was so, because once I started thinking about it, and then once I listen, like as I'm talking, I'm realizing how much I say. It's like when you listen back to the YouTube video and you're thinking, holy crap, I said honestly 72 times in 12 minutes. But then I almost became paralyzed to talk because I didn't want to say it. So I found myself overthinking, you know, the entire process of not saying kinda and everything. It was really hard for me, probably for like 6 months, that I just was stressed out about it because he wasn't saying never say that word again for the rest of your life. His point was, you're saying this a lot and it's devaluing your opinion. But in my mind, that word had to be rid from my vocabulary. So I spent far too much time listening to myself and talking very slow and purposeful. And then it just sounded stupid. So, but yeah.
I think ultimately the feedback was really good because I removed that word from my vocabulary. I removed the word like,
yes,
from my vocabulary. And I've been much better about ums. So I'd rather just have perfect silence than saying So it was constructive feedback.
Yes. And I felt like it was constructive feedback. It just was hard in the moment to take. Just like I'm sure when you read that comment, you were probably a bit horrified at the amount. Because it's something that you probably just had in your vocabulary that you weren't even thinking about. And if you and I are having a conversation, I probably wouldn't notice that you said it a lot. But when you're watching the video, it comes across totally different. Just like a podcast.
So those types of comments I actually don't mind. It's the ones that are very hateful are the ones that can sometimes get to you. And the reason why we're doing this episode today is we actually just have this mutual friend who recently got a ton of hate. And I guess, I don't know, how do you deal with that? I have my own personal story also.
Well, let's talk about your personal story.
You want to talk about mine first? Okay.
Well, I have one, you have one, and then we can talk about our friend. Because I think all three of them have different components of handling them.
Okay. So I'll tell my story first. So back in the day, this is when I was still working a full-time job. I want to say it was 2015, maybe? Mm-hmm. When did we start like kind of messaging each other? Was that 2015, maybe? 2014.
14. Yeah. I believe that I knew you when this happened.
No, you did, I think. Because I think I might have messaged you, hey, what should I do?
Yes. Yes. But we hadn't known each other very long. So it was probably 2014, 2015 that this happened to you.
Right. So what ended up happening was, and this is something that we used to do kind of with the store, we used to use Etsy just as a way to get good product ideas. Because if you think about it, on Etsy, there's people on there, they're not necessarily serious sellers, they're crafters, they're very, you know, clever, but they're not fit for mass production. So I wrote a post that said, hey, if you want to get potential ideas of what to sell online, you can go on Etsy, look what's out there. You know, take a product, make it your own, and get it mass produced. And I thought it was an innocuous statement that I made in a post. But somehow, someone who follows me, you know, was selling on Etsy, was an active member of the Etsy community, decided to post my article on the Etsy forums. And before you know it, I was getting hate mail like literally every 5 seconds. Someone threatening to come to my house and beat me up. I got some death threats. I mean, these are from like Etsy crafters. It was nuts. And that ruined my entire day.
Okay. That's the best part of the story is I picture these old women with knitting needles at your front door, just banging down with their doilies and their crocheted sweaters. Now we're going to get hate mail on this thing because that's not who's
probably
really on Etsy.
Yeah.
But when you told me what was going on, that's what I pictured was these knitters, you know, in a line with yarn ready to just attack you with their needles. And but it was pretty serious. I mean, because they posted it in the Etsy forum, but then they came over to your house, right? Not your physical house, but your website, your properties, and they started attacking you. It's one thing to be attacked in a forum. It's not fun, but I got attacked in a forum. Me and my business partners did about our conference the first year. People wrote blog posts about us. It was crazy. But as long as it wasn't on my property, I cared, but I didn't care the same.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even a member of the Etsy forums, to be quite frank. Like, I didn't even know about this post until someone who left a comment on the blog mentioned it.
Yeah.
And then I went to look at it. And then, the thread was like hundreds of posts deep.
Yeah.
Just all sorts of random. It didn't help that I was Asian, because I also got a lot of that. Like, all these Chinese people do is they just copy, copy, copy. They don't come up with anything themselves. I'm like, good Lord.
Meanwhile, that's where you bought your class from, Susan.
and I reread the post many times, and I wasn't like telling people to go copy Etsy people. I was like, hey, this is a great way to get ideas.
I remember told me, I read the post for you, and I said, I think my feedback to you was, I think your post is good. I can see why people on Etsy would be afraid.
And here was the funny part. I posted a screenshot of Etsy because kind of demonstrating like, oh, yeah, look, I mean, these people are clearly very talented. And then everyone who had like the picture on there and that Etsy picture demanded that I take that photo down because it was copyright. People were threatening lawsuits on copyright and everything. That was the worst day ever.
So what did you do?
That was the first time that happened to me. I took it down. I took down the post. But that did not stop the comments.
Correct.
People started emailing me after that. And all of a sudden, I was getting hate email like every 5 seconds.
Yeah. You had issues with your server, didn't you, at some point?
They didn't take the server down, I don't
think. No, but I thought the amount of traffic, like they sent so much traffic to your blog that it was, you had like some pretty severe issues. Just not, they weren't like hacking you, but they were just driving so much traffic because you angered like 100,000 people.
Well, here's the thing. I took down the post, which I thought would be a good thing. They were like, put it back up, you coward. Face what you said. You know?
Yeah. That's awesome, though.
You know, you chicken? You know, you don't. Yeah. I can't win with these people. So.
Yeah.
And then I made the mistake of responding to one lady.
Oh.
Nicely.
Yes.
You know, hey, this is not my intention, ball. And then it's like, whatever, you Chinese. You know, all you do is copy. It was bad.
So. So I think you said something just then that is very important to know is when you make people that angry, they don't want a solution. They want to be angry. So if you look back on that piece of content or something that you said, because sometimes you and I have both said things in podcasts that we've edited out, not because we don't necessarily believe in them or think they're right, but when I've gone back and listened to something, or the editor of our podcast listens to something, she'll say to me, what do you think about this line? Do you want to leave it in? And it's not because it's anything bad, but the way it was said, or, you know, if you don't get it in the right context, someone might have their feelings hurt. And I feel like that's valid. And it could have been said a different way that probably wouldn't have been offensive, because that was never our intention to offend anybody or to be hurtful. I mean, I don't mind offending people if I feel like it's true. So that's the thing. It's like, it's one thing if you say something and then you go back and you, like, if you would have said, oh, these Etsy sellers, those little small-minded fools, you know, here's how us big companies can take them over. You know, if you had had that tone to it, I could see you reading it and thinking, okay, I could have said this a lot differently and it probably wouldn't have hurt people's feelings. But a lot of the time, the people that are upset, they don't want a resolution. They want to be angry. So nothing that you do is going to change their reactions to you.
Yes. So I think you told me just wait it out. And it actually subsided within like a couple of days. What ended up happening actually is the moderator shut down that Etsy thread.
Interesting.
Because I apologized on the Etsy forum. I actually joined the Etsy forum and I said, hey, look, I took down the post.
You took up macrame, joined the Etsy forum.
So I this is what I said. Hey, look, I took down the post. I apologize if you guys are offended, and I can't do anything else. Just, you know, or whatever. And then so the moderator shut down that thread, and that ended the spigot. Thank God.
Well, usually there's someone in the mix that feels, I feel like most people just want to be angry. There are people that once they feel like you've apologized, like they got their resolution. He apologized. He took down the post. Let's move on. Let's someone else to attack.
Yeah. I mean, there were still some like people who were still hot and heavy.
Yeah.
But it subsided. Like the trickle of hate emails went down to like every hour, and then, you know, within a couple days hours. They were gone.
So I have two, and they're different, so I want to share both of them because they're different types of hate. So the first type I got was very similar to what you experienced with Etsy. When I held my very first event, it was myself and I had some partners in it, and we had gone to a few blogging events. Blogging wasn't new, but blogging events were new. And all of us, there was five of us, all of us were we were making money from our websites, but it was still in the stages where we didn't really understand affiliate marketing. We didn't really understand like brand partnerships. I mean, we were doing some of them, but we had no idea if we were doing them well. And we would go to these blogger events, and it was all fluff and feel good. And like, I mean, we would go to like the session on affiliate marketing, and these three people would be on a panel talking about how much money they made in affiliate marketing, but not giving you any strategy on, well, how are you making that much money? Is it because you have traffic? Are you writing review posts? Are you making video? Whatever. So we decided we were going to have an event that where we talked only about making money with a website. Like that was the goal, through traffic and, you know, other things. But the whole point of the event was, if you want to blog for money, this is your event. And what we wanted to avoid was people who wanted to come to the event for social. Because back then there were a lot of, let's just call them mom bloggers, who were blogging just as an outlet. You know, they were sharing crafts and they were doing amazing content, but they never really wanted it to be a business. So they would come to these events just to meet their other friends that were also, they had met on the internet, which I think is great. Like, I think that's a great reason to go to an event. But for me, I had to leave six kids and, you know, they had to be homeschooled by themselves. It was not easy for me to leave. And I didn't want to go to an event just to meet people. I wanted to go to an event to actually learn how to make good money. So we decided to do this event where it was all about making money. And one of the things that we chose to do was to make it application only. So like our mastermind for Seller Summit, you had to fill out an application to, to be considered. So we didn't realize that in itself was very offensive to people. But then we decided, because somehow we thought we were way more popular than we really were, that we were going to charge an application fee.
Interesting. Okay. I didn't know about this.
Yes. So, and here was our thought process behind it. We thought we would get like thousands of applications, which is, you are in events, you know, no one gets thousands of applications, but we didn't know. We were dumb. So we thought, one, we would get thousands of applications, and we didn't want people filling out the application that weren't serious. So we thought if we attach any money to it, then it deters people that really don't want to be at the event. And we said, if we don't pick you, we will refund your money. And if you do go, that money goes to the event. So it wasn't like a risk for people. And the application fee was $5.
Oh, God. Okay. All right.
It
That's
was
not
really
much at all.
Just, it was a barrier to entry. That's all we wanted it to be. So we are just like, we get our little graphics made. We launch our website. We are just like on the top of the world. And we launch this thing. And within 24 hours, some very large bloggers had written blog posts about us, how we were elitist, thought we were better than everybody else, who do we think we are, making people apply to hang out with us, because everyone had the mindset of like blogging events were social networking. They weren't about, to me, it was like, this is an education. We want to hold a seminar, right? And it was in forums. I mean, people with like a million page views a month wrote articles about us, named us, linked to our sites, which there's that side of me that's like, backlink from her? Yes. Right. But
I mean, this could have been the best marketing ploy ever.
Well, that's what we joked about later. Okay. But the problem was like it angered a lot of people. And I think we had planned that we would get 100 people. That our goal was to have 100 people at the event. We got 64 applications.
That's not bad.
No, it's not bad. Because we didn't have a list of people of, you know, we used our email lists of our of people that were our readers. Not they weren't bloggers, right? Mm-hmm. And so everybody that submitted an application got accepted to the event, which I think this is probably the first time anyone knows this. I don't think that we ever released that information. So if you came to the first Savvy Blogging, you're not as special as you thought you were. But it ended up being good and bad because it forced us to kind of reevaluate how it came across, because in a way it did come across as very elitist, and that was not at all our intention. Our intention was just because we thought we were going to get a lot more people than it's kind of like when you make a job application and you have them like write sample. You make it hard enough to where you're not dealing with people that don't care, that'll just fill out anything.
Sure. Yeah, no, I understand.
Yeah. So we
But you wanted this to be kind of elitist, right? I mean, if you're screening for revenue.
We didn't even screen for revenue. Like, it wasn't even about revenue. It was about the intention to have a business.
Oh.
So it wasn't okay. That you had to be making a certain amount of money. It was that you had to want to make money.
I see.
And okay. I mean, the sessions all were under the assumption that you were making money, but you could have come. There were people that came that didn't have a website and today are very successful bloggers. And that was our intention, is that you're here because you want to build a business, not because you want to hang out with your friends and meet people that you've read their sites for 2 years. But we got very defensive. We responded. We wrote comments. We wrote blog posts. At the end of the day, it didn't matter. Like the people that wrote about us and everyone that was commenting. And what hurt was that some of these people were our friends. And then they're in these comments like, I can't believe it either. You know, and you're like, you know me. Text me, call me. I'll have a conversation with you and explain myself. So that was the part that hurt, was that it felt like people that we were friendly with were attacking us. But at the end of the day, I don't think us responding did a bit of difference. The people that knew our intentions came to the event, and the people that didn't weren't going to come anyway. So, you know, it's that lesson is, I think a lot of times when you believe in what you're doing, saying nothing is fine. Just let it go. And enjoy the backlinks. So that was the first real foray into that. The second one was I had a hater on my website, and she from day one left really awful comments, mostly about my kids.
Ooh, which, that's terrible.
Yes, which, you know, I can joke about you know I joke about my kids a lot, especially like behind the scenes. But at the end of the day, like no one else can do that. That's me, you know, and they'll joke about it with me, but. It got to the point with her where she was telling me she was going to come to my house. You know, it got very personal. And with her, I mean, that's where I think if you have someone like that, if you have someone who's really threatening you in a way that seems unsafe, I did involve authorities. I found her address. I found all her information. I blocked her IP. I blocked her from all my social pages. So I think when you have something like that, where someone is truly threatening you, you have to take it to another level. It's not about apologizing or, you know, taking down a post. You have to involve. And thankfully, that doesn't happen a whole lot. But I do know of people that have had it happen to them where they did feel physically unsafe. And I posted so much about my family early on that it wasn't hard to figure out where I lived. And I did local news and things like that, too. So with that one, I did have to like take action. And once I told her that I had contacted the authorities, in the beginning, I kept responding to her, and I should have just ignored her from day one. And that was the other thing. The second she made the first comment that I felt was like, took the line from just being like, oh, you had kids because you wanted slaves, you know, which was something that she said at some point. Like at that point, it should have been like, okay, you need to be blocked. You need to have your IP blocked.
But what did you do to piss her off? Nothing, right?
She just literally did not like what I wrote.
Oh.
I mean, it was like, your kids are stupid. You know, every year I would post our homeschool curriculum, and I would link to every book that we were reading. I would link to all the curriculum. And, you know, she would say things like, your kids are so dumb. That's the book they're reading. He's in the third grade. He should be reading XYZ. And I'm thinking to myself, well, he's dyslexic. I'm glad he can read it all. You know, and so I would defend myself and like defend the book choices because, you know, I felt like I needed to educate her, which was stupid. And because I engaged with her, it just fueled the fire to the point where she was like, you know, I'm going to figure out where you live and, you know, I'm going to report you to CPS because your kids are allowed to use the oven. And, you know, it just got really stupid. And I was like, OK, I'm done. We're not going to do this. You're not going to threaten my family. And so I did have to like really take different types of action. I don't think that's something that you need to do like in the Etsy case or in my blog conference case. But when someone is like that, I don't think you mess around with that because there are some crazy people in the world.
I think the key here is not to respond because they're just trying to get a rise out of you. They're saying whatever they can to get you to reply.
Yes. And it is very hard when someone attacks your kids not to respond. Like, you can attack me all day long. I don't feel the need to respond.
Actually, this reminds me of this other story I had, too, where I wrote this eBay article where I was like, hey, you shouldn't be selling on eBay because of the fees. You should start your own store. And I still remember this commenter. This isn't her real name, but this is her handle. It was Baby Like to Dance. She that was her handle. But she just started hating on me, sending death threats again. Why does everyone send death threats to me?
Do you want to go to jail for that? I mean, that's...
Well,
that's
is it illegal to do that? Is it really?
I think you can't... I don't think you can send a death threat. I think that involves the FBI at that point.
Yeah, but this person just found me everywhere and just started emailing me, posting on, just everywhere, on the blog, comments. She was very prolific.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, man, maybe she has like a computer script that's doing this. But no, I think it was actually genuinely her.
You're like, this is AI. She's she's doing this to 50 other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't respond. So when you get a personal hater like that, my best advice is to block them and ignore them. And I wouldn't block someone that just is like, honestly, that's just, I mean, whatever. They're being a jerk.
Oh, that's fine. They're actually trying to help probably. I mean, in a hurtful
angry,
way.
Yeah. Hurtful. Yeah. Not unhelpful way. But when someone starts threatening you or threatening your family or threatening your livelihood, that's when I take it to another level. And I will admit this. I got very petty with her because it literally took over my life for probably a month. Because I was so angry with her because she had been doing it for like 18 months too, just more and like just picking away to the point where when I went to block her on Facebook, which this is also like, if you're going to be a troll, disguise yourself. Like don't, especially like to a blogger who like lives their entire life on the internet. So when I went to block her on Facebook, because she was on my Facebook page making comments on my business page, I had to click on her profile. Well, in her profile, she had one of her Facebook, it wasn't a private Facebook profile, so I could see stuff. So I learned about, so of course I spent, 2 days reading every Facebook post she had ever written, formulating my plan to destroy her life,
Ouch.
And so one of the things that she had posted was a photo of like her kitchen or something. It was like a picture of her house. Well, in the background were some boxes from Amazon. So of course I'm like sending this to my developer guy and I'm like, blow up this photo. I want the address off her box, right? So like I had her home address, like I knew where she worked. I was like, so at one point I went back to her and I was like, this is your address, this is your boss, this is this, I suggest you leave me alone, which was so stupid. Like you should never, but I was like World War III in this because I didn't realize that like all that did was fuel her more. And I was very careful not to make any threats about it because I was like, I kind of at that point knew I probably had to like go to the authorities about like cyber crime or whatever. And but I was like, if you're going to bully, hide your identity. Because I knew her kids' names. I knew everything about her.
So what did she do? I'm curious. How'd she react to that?
She never responded after that. But then I still ended up like she lived in Tennessee. So I think I contacted like the authorities in Tennessee. I gave them all of her information. I had screenshots of the things she had said. I just emailed like whatever the department was there and like that was it. I was like, here you go.
So it worked.
It did work.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was bad that like I figured out the bus stop her kids were at. Like I was like, don't mess with me. Don't come after my family.
You should have said, like, your kids are wearing a blue shirt right now.
Yeah. I see your kid in the blue hoodie. I felt like I was like Jason Bourne, But anyway, I don't recommend doing that at all. It was a total waste of my time. I should have blocked her and done it a year before I did. I just allowed it to get to me. And for some reason, I thought I could convince her that my kids were smart and that I was a great mom and all these things. And she literally just hated me for whatever reason. I guess I bothered her.
So I want to segue this into something that happened to me after that, which was I started writing content where I wasn't pissing anyone off. And it was just a very watered down
thing. I did the same exact thing. I stopped doing video.
Yeah, which is not what you want to be doing. And this kind of segues back to our initial comment. Like, if you're doing something right, then you probably are pissing off people.
Yes.
So I started going through my arc. Actually, my wife did too, because she didn't want Baby Like to Dance like threatening me anymore.
Baby Like to Dance at your front door.
At least like she hid her identity. She followed your advice, clearly.
Yes. I feel like Will Ferrell needs to play you. He's like, Baby Likes to Dance.
So I started writing just very neutral stuff.
I remember this phase. It was very vanilla.
That was probably like the worst part of my content career.
Yeah.
None of this, like, I didn't even want to read it because it was so, I didn't take any sides. I made sure I didn't offend anyone. And that's like the absolute worst thing that you can do.
It's the worst thing you can do for a lot of reasons. One, you're not being true to yourself. So you're writing stuff that's not genuine, and that's the easiest way to fail. And then two, I don't want to say controversy, because I don't think you need to be a controversial person, but you need to have an opinion. That's why people follow you. People like you because you have opinions on things, and they're interested in, they, it's like when you meet someone and you think, like you and I, when we first met, you thought I was crazy, but then the more we got to know each other, we actually have a lot in common for being as different as we are.
Wait, like, you calling like me crazy?
Yes, I'm calling you crazy.
Okay.
That's the different part. You're not crazy. I'm crazy. I'm crazy white girl. You're steady Asian. Yes. After that, we have all this stuff in common, right? Like down to like weird things in our childhood that were similar, like piano lessons, and like we liked the same foods and we liked the same music. Like we had all these weird commonalities that when you looked at us on paper, we shouldn't have anything in common, right? We have the same philosophies on a lot of different things. So I think people resonate with, you resonate with people that feel like, hey, it's like when we meet people who listen to your podcast, they're like, oh, I totally get you, right? They feel like you're their advocate. So when you start neutralizing everything that you do, who cares what you say? Because it doesn't, what does it mean? You're just literally just spewing out the facts. I can read, you know, I can just go read a dictionary if I want that. So I think it's important that you do take a side or an opinion on things, because that's why people follow you to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be opinionated.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to be in your face, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You have to take some sort of stand, because that's what makes you interesting. And I can't remember who told me this now. Maybe it was one of my professors at Stanford. They're like, you guys are all... Like, I think she got up and said, you guys are all weird, but it's this weirdness that's going to make you successful someday.
Yeah.
And little kids in elementary school, too... You know, you can kind of spot out like the quirky kids, and those are the people that are going to stand out later.
Yeah. Well, it's like we were at ECF Live a couple weeks ago, and Spencer Jan. So he gave a keynote talk, and as he was talking, I thought he gave a great presentation, but I knew everything he was saying was resonating with you. And because he was so focused on his family. And I know that's something that's like a very important value to you, is time with your family and building something that allowed you to have time with your family. And he was talking in his talk about how a lot of his decisions were fueled by the fact that he really wanted like to have this life where he got more time with his family. And so as he's talking, in my mind, I'm like, Steve is like amening everything he's saying, because it's totally right up your alley. And when he was done, you were like, that was an amazing talk. Like, he was great. You went over and met him. I think you got him on your podcast.
He's coming to Seller Summit.
Yeah, he's coming to Seller Summit. But I knew that he would resonate. But if he would have got up there and just told his story, like fact for fact, this is what I did. I had these companies. They didn't work. Then I did this company. It really worked. This is how we grew it. This is how we sold it. Blah, blah, blah. It would have been like, okay, that's interesting. But you wouldn't have like felt like, hey, I've got a connection with this guy.
Absolutely.
But you had a connection with him because he gave his story as it really was, flooded with his opinions. And for people that are like, I don't want to have any time with my family, I want to build a $10 billion business and whatever, buy Twitter, fine. Like, that resonates with a different group of people, but it wouldn't have resonated with you. So I think that's the most important thing about having an opinion, is that that's where you're going to get your loyal followers and readers.
I mean, here's what's counterintuitive, and it took me a long time to learn this, is that when you write for the masses, like, no one's going to listen to what you have to say. But when you're writing to a very specific person, let's say Asian males over the age of 40, like, you'll get those people.
Yes.
And they'll resonate with you. And then you'll attract, you know, part of the larger audience as well. But those people will be like your major supporters.
Yeah. So let's talk about, let's wrap this up with our friend. I don't know if you want to name him, but we had a friend who released a podcast, talked about, and they, in the, I don't know how much we want to share, but like basically he offended an entire community, basically the same way as that you offended the Etsy community.
Correct. It's a very similar story, actually.
Yes. The problem is that they, I don't know if they're just a more organized group of people, but they went to like Reddit, they went to other podcasts, they went to magazines. So this was significantly more far-reaching than your Etsy fiasco.
But I also think it's because our mutual friend kind of kept responding and everything too, and yes, defending himself.
And I will say, so I will say this, he was accused of being a racist. And you and I both know this person very well. He is the furthest thing from a racist. I mean, I don't like that term anyway. Like, but when you know him, he is one of the nicest, most genuine, giving, selfless people we've ever met.
Right.
He will do anything for you. So that hit him at his core. Like, that was something we talked about earlier, where that was just so hurtful to him because he felt like that is absolutely not who I am. And so he made the very critical error of defending himself. And the problem in that is that when people are on a witch hunt, and this is what it was a witch hunt, because they were offended. They thought he was going to take over their small businesses. That's where that was the core of this thing, is that he was going to come in as this, you know, giant conglomeration, which he's not, and take over all the mom and pops. And so, you know, they threw the word racism out there to sort of, you know, just inflame everybody, which it did. It worked. And he was so hurt that he wanted to defend himself. And I think it's very hard on stuff like that where you're like, that is absolutely not who I am. It's hard to just say, I'm going to ignore it, because you feel like, no, you don't know me. That's not who I am. I'm absolutely, you know. And the more he responded, and he, of course, that's the other thing, is like he's responding with like logic, right?
Yeah.
And here are the five reasons why this isn't true about me. You know, like, and everything he said, they were able to twist and just continue on with, you know, well, that means this and this means that, you know, and it continued to spiral. And, you know, he's been really honest, I think, about it to like his friends. Like, this has like affected his life, not just his business. Like, they left negative reviews on his podcast. Didn't he say they got 51 reviews?
He got review bombed. Yeah.
Yeah. He had articles written about him. He got mentioned on other podcasts. And so he and another friend of ours who owns a very large company were at dinner right before you got there. And our other mutual friend said, you know, you can't say anything. Like, when this happens, you have to just disappear. You know it's not true. The people that care about you know it's not true. You need to walk away. And he just couldn't. He couldn't walk away. He was like formulating his next, you know, PR plan. And I think, you know, our other friend had a good point. Like, this is going to die out in a couple weeks. One, because it isn't true, right? And that's the thing. If the stuff that's being said about you is not true, it will die because they'll find someone else to crucify, right? They'll find someone else to go after. And so you have to just not respond. You have to walk away. You have to lay low. Don't publish a podcast for a week. Don't go on the internet. Like, just literally disappear. Because in a week, they're going to hate on somebody else just as much. And, you know, who knows if it's true about the next person, but you'll be a bygone. They'll have forgotten about you.
It kind of reminds me of like when you're in a fight with your significant other and anything that you say will be twisted around against you.
Yes.
So I've learned that lesson over the years. So I just kind of zip my mouth.
Yeah.
And things cool down. Same thing.
Yeah.
Pretend you're in a fight with your significant other.
Just shut up. Yeah, because it's like you'll say something and they'll take whatever you said. I remember I shouldn't share this, but I will. I don't care. So when I moved into my house, it had one master bedroom closet. Well, I really like owning my own closet. Like, I like two master bedroom closets. I know that's probably snooty or whatever, but I'm very organized. I like my stuff organized. My ex was not organized. And so in our last house, we had two closets. In his closet, I didn't know the color of the carpet. Like, he literally just had stuff piled and stacked and clothes. Like, he never hung up clothes. Whatever. I don't care. If it's your closet, I don't care. Like, be as messy as you want. Have no system. Never know where things are. Whatever. Doesn't matter to me, because my stuff is all where I like it. So we move into the house and it has one gigantic closet in the master bedroom. And I'm immediately like specking out where I can put a second closet. And so now this is clearly, you know, based on many other things, but I made a comment about how, you know, I wanted to build a second closet and here's where it could go and it would be perfect, blah, blah, blah. So you don't love me anymore? I didn't, but like that wasn't the point, right? Like, but like I remember that argument, like continually defending myself and like literally going down a list of like why people need two closets. Like I had a PowerPoint basically in my head and a thesis paper on why two closets is a necessity. It didn't matter what I said because in his mind, two closets meant I didn't love him, regardless of whether that was true or not. None of my like logical defenses mattered because every time I said, well, it's because you don't love me because my clothes are on the floor. It was like, whatever, like everything I said just dug my hole 10 more feet. Right. So by the end of it, I was 200 feet underground. I wasn't getting a closet. That's for darn sure. And, you know, but it was the same thing. Like I should have just shut up. I should have been like, I want two closets. I'm hiring a contractor. You know, like there's no other meaning to this. You know, it's just I don't want to share. I'm selfish. Like, I should have just gone with, like, I'm a selfish, terrible person. I want my own closet.
Maybe we should end it on that takeaway. Tony should just shut up.
Yes. But I think it's the same, just like you were saying, nothing I said mattered, you know. And I think that's when you deal with people that get on the hate and just are just attacking. They've made up their mind about you. Nothing that our friend could have said would have made them go, oh yeah, you're right. You're a good guy. Like, no, they had made up their mind. There was no defending. He could not defend himself. If you shut up and walk away, they're going to forget about you in a week. Some other thing is going to be in the news and that's what they're going to be worried about.
And I'll leave this last thing. And this has to do with email. If people are emailing you hate mail, whatever you do, don't respond. Because if you do respond, they'll go, hey, he actually checks this email. He's seeing these comments, right? Whereas if you don't respond, they're still wondering whether you even got the message in the first place. So that's my tactic.
That's your tactic with all of life. Just don't respond to emails.
That's true. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.